Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And who knew that we had a club that was devoted to astronomy here in Santa Barbara? And I've got members of the club on the screen. We're going to talk a little bit about the astronomical unit. And how I found out about this was one of the members was giving a talk at the Santa Barbara Natural History Museum. And I thought, this is really cool. And I asked Luke Swetland there, you know, he's the CEO. What is this club? And he said, oh, let me put you in touch with Chuck McPartland, who's the outreach coordinator for the club. And it turns out that this is the astronomy club sponsored by the Santa Barbara Natural History Museum. They do all sorts of fun things. They have a telescope workshop on Tuesdays. If you guys are interested in getting your telescopes back in order, I think we're having a semi-eclipse coming up soon. I know the moon is in Taurus, if you follow astrology. First Friday of every month is the meeting at the museum, Natural History Museum. The club is 100 people strong from all over the country. And that is fantastic. And so I have with us today Jerry Wilson, who's the president. Hello. Let me introduce Jerry. There's Jerry. Jerry has a PhD in physics. He's retired from local tech companies, making spacecraft remote sensing detectors. He does astro imaging with telescopes that he has made. He teaches mirror making and astro imaging. So we have a very accomplished person there for sure, Jerry Wilson. Then we've got Tom Whitmore. Tom is the newsletter editor. There's Tom. And a PhD in physics as well, retired from tech companies, to the lecturer at UCSB in Westmont. He does visual observing with telescopes he's made, and he teaches mirror making as well. Tom Totten is the webmaster.
Hello.
There he is. He's retired from the water treatment plant for the city of Santa Barbara. He's a former president of the Santa Barbara Astronomical Unit. He manages the website and the club equipment. And Tom, you don't look old enough to have retired.
Yeah, I think I'm at least 70 years old.
Gosh, you look great. Chuck McPartland is retired. He's the outreach coordinator. As I said, he's retired from working on radar systems software. Coordinator for Santa Barbara Astronomical Unit Public Outreach Events. And the former president, volunteer planetarium presenter at Santa Barbara Natural History Museum. And how I got interested in the club was an interesting story that Chuck sent me. And I want to start with that. It's the story of the Porter Garden Telescope. And a fascinating story. And, you know, the things, I've been a member of this community forever, and I've never even heard of such a thing.
Yeah,
so tell us a little bit about the Porter Garden Telescope.
Well, this was a bronze statuary sculpture, basically, that you could put in your garden. And when it was folded up and not in use as a telescope, it looked like a lotus plant. But it was a fully functional, equatorially mounted reflector telescope. You could come out and put a mirror inside of it and then an eyepiece and a diagonal. And it was about 4 inches in aperture. And there were about something on the order of 50 of them made in total early in the 1900s. And this was, I think it was number 43 was ours, but it was just not the entire telescope. There was a gentleman that contacted the museum, and then the museum contacted Chrissy Cook and me. And we went to this guy's house on the Riviera. And he said in the 1930s, when he was a boy, he was helping his father, who was a contractor, remodeling a mansion up on the Riviera, and this telescope was in the garden, and the people were just getting rid of it. They didn't want it, and he asked if he could take it home, and they said yes. He didn't get the base because it was attached to a pedestal. There's a bronze base that says, you know, Kepler and Newton and all that on it. But he got the main structure of the telescope, and he had the mirror and the diagonal and the eyepiece, but those got lost over the years. And here he was in 2004, I think it was, cleaning out his garage, and he realized he had this telescope, so he wanted to donate it to somebody who would get it working again. So we got it, the pieces that he had, and people in the club who do the telescope making, you know, ground a new mirror for it and made a diagonal and eyepieces and an eyepiece holder. So it's a really, and Russell Porter was just like, he's really famous in, you know, astronomical circles as a, especially amateur astronomers, because he started the amateur telescope makers on the East Coast that meet at Stellafane. It's their 100th anniversary this year. And really got amateur telescope making going in the U.S. And he also worked on the Palomar scope. He was an Arctic explorer. He was an architect. He was a real polymath.
So you write that by the age of 34, Russell Porter had made 9 Arctic exploration trips, climbed Mount McKinley, and then he's invented this Porter Garden Telescope. And I have to say, he's a graduate of MIT, became interested in astronomy, began writing his own optical lenses for large telescopes. And his enthusiasm inspired his colleagues. In 1923, he and his colleagues, so we're talking the 20s, mm-hmm. became yeah. the Springfield Telescope Makers 100 years ago. And 100 years ago, they received a patent for the Garden Telescopes. And he went on to build the 200-inch telescope in Palomar here in California. Fantastic story. You know, and what is so fantastic was looking into this. This telescope is beautiful. Yeah. It's a work of art. You know, it's bronze. It has this kind of Art Nouveau feel. You know, it arches over the you look into the eyepiece, it's sort of a diagonal. So it's like that, like Tom was saying, that lotus blossom kind of feel to it. It's absolutely gorgeous. And you can get it, if you're interested in hearing more about this, you can get in touch with the club, because Tom T was showing us, of course, it's radio, dear listener, but Tom T was showing us pictures of the Garden Telescope and the handbook from 1920s. Where did you find the handbook?
Must have found it online somewhere.
It's on the webpage of the Stellafane Amateur Astronomer Group. They have like a museum, an online museum, and there's a PDF of it up there.
Stellafane is the club that Russell Porter started that Chuck yeah. mentioned a minute ago.
Okay, Stellafane. Okay, so everybody that's interested, there's the, oh boy, I'm seeing it now, Tom. The spelling is S-T-E-L-L-A, Stella. F-A-N-E. Yeah, Stellafane. And that's in Breezy Hill, Springfield, Vermont. Stellafane is the club, 100 years old. And let's see, there's workshops, there's conventions, how to build a telescope on the website. You know, this is I've never conceived of this, but are there a lot of telescope fanatics in yes, Tom is shaking his head, yes. How many do you think? How many people admire and have telescopes even?
Well, Jerry's made 3 telescopes at the same time, a 10-inch, a 14-inch, and 18-inch mirrors that he's turned into telescopes. And so he really was grinding there for a few years, getting these mirrors made, and then of course, constructing telescopes around them. So Jerry, what else have you made that way?
Well, let me go back a sec. She said, I was asking how many people in the U.S. I judge that by the subscription numbers for the Astronomy Magazine and Sky and Telescope. And I believe they're between 250,000 people that subscribe to those magazines.
500,000 strong. That's amazing. Amazing.
That's telescope maker. That's users, too.
Users. Okay. Telescope makers, gosh, It's so interesting to me. I mean, I've been fascinated my whole life, not with astronomy, but with astrology. And I loved, I know Chuck shaking his head. I'm not going to go there, but it's been interesting to look at the sky that way. And boy, you guys, here's another shout out for the club, and then we're going to go to a quick break. But if you're interested in, this is our own club in Santa Barbara, but it's national. It's the Astronomical Unit. It's the Astronomy Club sponsored by SBMNA. That's the Natural History Museum sponsors it. And they have a telescope workshop on Tuesday. Richard, our producer, was saying that he's got a defunct telescope. He's got to drag that thing in and have the guys work on it on Tuesdays. First Friday of every month, they meet at the museum. And in our club, there's 100 people. And Tom, you teased me with, there was a picture, I think it was right outside of a restaurant in Santa Barbara, a bunch of people pointing at the sky. I want to know what that was all about. Were those people watching the eclipse, for example?
That is correct. Well, it was a partial eclipse here in Santa Barbara on October 14th. And the total eclipse going across the United States from Texas to Canada will be in April 8th next year.
Okay, so you had a bunch of people that were outside of, where was that? Was that?
That was the Camino Real Marketplace, and we had just over 2,000 people show up.
You're kidding!
No.
2,000 people should be.
So that was a Saturday morning. And then that night at the museum, we had another, 300 people, Chuck?
330, yeah.
So there it is.
You can see one star pretty clearly during the day. At nighttime, you can see a few thousand.
Okay, we'll go to quick break. When we get back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about the things that the club does. We've got the outreach coordinator, Chuck McPartland, with us, who's, I guess, you must have organized that if there were a couple thousand people come, Chuck, right?
Was
that?
I didn't organize them. It was pretty disorganized. But the museum wanted to have an event for the eclipse, but their conditional use permit is very restrictive because it's in a neighborhood. So we arranged with the Camino Real Marketplace. We do a Telescope Tuesday there every month, and they were happy to have people come out. And it's better because there's lots of parking and there's restrooms and there's food and all that kind of stuff.
That's fantastic. And then you had a talk in the evening.
Not a talk, but a star party. On the second Saturday of every month, we have a free public star party at the museum with telescopes set up in the night sky.
All right. So now you say that again. Saturdays, once a month.
The second Saturday of every month, we have a free public star party at the museum. The third Friday of every month, we have a public telescope night at Westmont College. And on the fourth Tuesday of every month for this year, we do Telescope Tuesday at Camino Real Marketplace. But we try to make sure we have a moon to look at because there's so much light there. So for 2024, it'll move to the second Tuesday of the month. And then we do schools and we do campgrounds and we do hotels and all over the place.
When you say public, like, for example, if I came, would I be needing to buy a telescope to participate?
We have a bunch of telescopes set up and people look through them and stuff.
Yeah, we bring our own telescopes and set them up.
I can just see some of the kids getting hooked on this.
Especially now with Saturn up in the sky. They love that.
Yeah.
Let's go to a quick break and we get back from the break. Yeah, I'd love to hear more about Saturn in the sky right now that you can kind of see it. With the naked eye, even. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Don't turn that down. I am speaking with Jerry Wilson, Tom Whittemore, Tom Toten, Chuck McPartland. They are members and leaders of the Astronomical Unit, the Astronomy Club, sponsored by the Santa Barbara Natural History Museum. And I just happened upon, the discovery of this group. And then and Luke from the museum said, here, get in touch with the guys. It's an amazing club. In fact, Luke was saying he's got pieces of that telescope that we talked about, that Russell Porter Garden Telescope. He's got pieces of it in his office, apparently.
Well, he's got the working version now, yes, in his office.
It works.
Yeah.
As a club, we fabricated the missing pieces to make it work.
They're not statuary bronze, but they work.
All right. So will it ever be on display?
It was on display in the entry hall to the museum in the entrance kiosk or entrance office for a while. I don't know if they're going to put it outside because it probably could get stolen rather easily. So it's in his office.
How fantastic. And it was on a beautiful base and you could never find the base, even though you wrote an article about it. And it was it lived near the El Encanto Hotel in a mansion up there in the Riviera neighborhood. But no base was ever found. So did you guys make a base for that? It was a beautiful marble base that top. Yeah.
We made a base. Yeah. It's just wood, you know, but it functions.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's so cool. All right, Richard, let's go to quick break. We're talking with the Astronomical Unit, sponsored by the Santa Barbara Natural History Museum. Don't turn that down. Back in a sec. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm speaking with the Astronomical Unit. And so is my dog, obviously. And this is the Astronomical Unit, the Astronomy Club, sponsored by the Santa Barbara Natural History Museum. And just to give you a little bit of a sense of what they do, they have telescope workshops on Tuesdays. They have an outreach that's incredible. They do community telescoping. They do schools and colleges. And they show what the telescope can do. You actually can go to one of these events and they'll bring their own telescope. So they show you. There he is. There's a picture that there's a community event where someone's brought their own telescope, a large one.
And that's folks, Chuck McPartlin.
That's Chuck. And he's giving a demonstration of a telescope that he.
Oh, by the way, there's this little thing on the table here. And Chuck, what is that thing?
Oh, that's the rock from space. We hit people with a meteorite, too, at a lot of these events.
How fun is that? And this is, obviously, Chuck is the outreach coordinator for the club. But Chuck, how many events do you do a month?
This month we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then I do 2 planetarium shows.
I see. And the planetarium, where is that? Where is the planetarium?
At the Museum of Natural History, there's Gladwin Planetarium. They just got a new high-resolution projector. It's great. Just turn on the night sky anytime during the day, go anywhere on the Earth, and you can go hover around Jupiter while it rotates beneath you. Look at all its 95 moons, 146 moons for Saturn.
So tell us about Saturn right now. Saturn is right there in the sky. It's kind of fighting with another planet, isn't it?
Well, Jupiter's up a little bit later. Jupiter's quite bright. Saturn's not quite as bright. But Saturn's fantastic through a telescope because you can see the rings and you can see, you know, on a good night, about 6 of its moons, and it looks fake.
Why does it look fake? Jerry, tell me why. Why is Chuck saying it looks fake?
Because it's so clear, so nice and crisp of an image. And I've had people accuse me of putting a slide in the telescope for them to look at. And that's when the air is real stable. There's a property of air called seeing. And if the air is wiggling because there's winds at the upper level, then it makes your image boil and wiggle. But frequently we get here next to the ocean, we get really crisp images because the sea gets very good for a period of time.
And, you know, Tom T is showing me a picture, dear listener. I know it's radio, but he's showing me a photograph of Saturn and it is obviously a planet, but it's got a ring around it. And are you saying it looks fake? Because what you actually see when you look at that is like this storybook image.
It's just exactly. Like
it looks just like this, seeing. Except smaller.
Yeah.
And what does Jupiter look like?
Jupiter's a double cheeseburger. It's got cloud bands. It's bigger. It's got cloud bands in its atmosphere. So.
Okay, it's got more cloud bands.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's an image. Well, of course, it doesn't help on the radio, but it's got darker cloud bands and lighter cloud bands. So it looks kind of like a double cheeseburger.
I can see that. And now I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Richard. Now, but Saturn has a single ring around it, right?
It's got billions of ice crystals in orbit around it, and they form a flat disc-shaped ring, but it's not. And people have divided it based on gaps in the rings, but it's actually a cloud of particles.
So the community could come out and use your telescopes and take a look at these planets.
Yeah.
And tell us again where the community can find the schedule of the community events.
Tom?
The schedule on our website. That's right. Let's see if I can find that real quick here. It is located. Miscellaneous. A little farther. Sorry. It's on our website, sbau.org. I just remember we're not showing images right now. So if you go to sbau.org, then you'll find our main webpage. And then at the top, there's a menu where you can see events calendar. And you can click on that and see our listed events. And anything left in October, Chuck? Let's see what's going on here.
Now, nope. Just Halloween in your driveway if you want, but all our public events are over for October. The webpage does not yet have the November events on it, but Thursday, November 2nd, we're doing a science night at Monte Vista School. And then Friday is the meeting where we'll have a speaker on star formation at the museum. And we're doing Santa Barbara Community Academy. And then we have on the 11th, we have the public star party at the museum. We're doing Hope School. We're doing Westmont on the 17th. That's the third Friday. And they also have a sort of a space themed concert before the observation. So at like 6 p.m. at Westmont in their chapel. And then we're doing Los Flores Ranch Park up in Santa Maria on the 18th on Saturday. And then we're doing the fourth Tuesday of the month, the 28th at Camino Real Marketplace. And we're doing Peabody School and Foothill School.
So now this is a dumb question, but are these viewings, I should say, are they always at night?
Except when we have something like a solar eclipse or a transit of Mercury, transit of Venus. Now, in their observatory, they have a solar telescope. So on the weekends, they open that up and they look at the sun.
Okay. And so I want to ask Tom T. this question. So Tom T., how did you become hooked? How old were you?
Well, I've been interested in astronomy and science since I was in high school and used to get Scientific American at home and Sky and Telescope, I think, at one point. Then college, I took an astronomy class and liked it. But after that, it was pretty much left it behind and just trying to be a worker out there, a technician eventually came to the city of Santa Barbara from Michigan and joined in at the Public Works Department. Looks like Richard's trying to indicate something.
Yeah, he's giving me a sign that we have to go to quick break, but continue.
So when I retired from the city of Santa Barbara, I was looking for some activity, and the club popped up in my vision, and I joined. And Chuck McPartland's been a great mentor, and going to outreaches and learning about telescopes and learning about the night sky. We call Chuck, Wikipedia, but Chuck we call Astropedia. He has quite the great memory for a lot of astronomy thing facts, and these other mentors like Jerry Wilson and Tom Whittemore, they're fantastic as well, and getting to understand astronomy in some detail. And we can talk when we come back about the speakers that we have coming up should be interesting what we've had and what's coming up.
Yes, definitely. That's on my radar as well. Just a shout out before we go to break. This is the Astronomical Unit. It is a club that's 100 people strong. They obviously do so much community outreach. It's astounding. They've got telescope workshops. They got First Friday viewings and lectures and First Friday meetings, and then community viewings all over. I mean, all over the Central Coast, schools, colleges, what do you call them? Parking areas in our malls, for example, they'll set up shop. And you can find out more if you go to the, it's AU, it's, what is it again, Tom? What's the website?
It's sbau.org.
Easy, that's easy. And you can find out the listing. When we get back from the break, I want to talk about some of the talks that are going to happen. I think I just read that somebody talked from your club at the museum, did they not?
Just on October, well, we had a misfire kind of on October 6th, our last First Friday, but we turned out we found a YouTube related to our speaker, and that came through very interesting to listen to. But we've had lots of different folks, and I'll show you the list if you want to do that now, or do you want to come after
let's break? Let's take a break, and then when we get back from the break, we'll talk about the kind of speakers that you're going to bring to the Natural History Museum. How cool is that? Don't turn it on the dial. I'm here with the Astronomical Unit, our club, our astronomical club here in Santa Barbara. Don't turn that dial. Back in a sec. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm speaking with the Astronomical Unit, and this is the Astronomy Club sponsored by the Santa Barbara Natural History Museum. Fantastic community outreach. I'm blown away with all the things that they do, the community that they bring together. Tom T was going to tell us a little bit about the speakers that they've had. And will be coming. So, you know, if you go, even the Natural History Museum's website also does speakers that speak at the museum as part of the club. That's how I found out about the club. So you're going to go to sbau.org, and you can find all the speakers there. So, Tom, tell me about some of the speakers you've enjoyed.
Well, in the past, we've had all the way, let's go back. Here on our main webpage, I go back to March 22, and Briley Lewis was a speaker for us, and she was talking about exoplanets, how to image those. So we've had a lot of grad students from UCLA and UCSB, Las Cumbres Observatory, which is based here in Goleta, and so a wide range of speakers. And Ron Heron, if you remember his name, he's our vice president, and he's doing a great job of rounding up speakers that we have that we get to Farron Hall at the Museum of Natural History or on Fleischmann, and sometimes we've communicated by Zoom to speakers. But you can see we've had our local astronomy manager before John Winkowski. We had Chrissy Cook. She did a talk along with Rocio Kaiman, I guess.
Kaiman
talking about the James Webb Space Telescope. UCSB professors, there's Jerry and Ron doing a presentation. Our December meetings, our members get a chance to do 20-minute talks, basically, about what they're working on or what they're interested in. But coming up in November 3rd, our first Friday in November, we've got Matt Povic, PhD at the Cal Poly Pomona, and he's coming in live at the Fleischmann Auditorium. And we'll be able to, he'll be talking about, says his title talk is Taking the Pulse of the Milky Way with Citizen Science. So was it called, Chuck, the Zooniverse or something? And was
Zooniverse, Citizen Science, yeah.
And so people can look at images and help scientists determine what's real and what's not, and for different I guess, characteristics of galaxies or stars, and they can help out with the, I guess it's kind of statistical type of work being done to, that they can sort through and figure out, you know, there's so many images being taken that it takes a lot of time to go through them. And on December 1st, we'll have member talks, and January 5th, we'll have a person from Stellafane talking about the Porter Garden Telescope again, Mario Mota. So, yeah, we've had quite a list of folks coming through and great talks on First Friday. So if you're an armchair astronomer, that's kind of like where I started. You get to these talks, and then eventually you get hooked into getting your own telescope and participating in outreaches, which is kind of fun. I like telling people about sizes and distances in space, comparing astronomical units, which is a distance between the Earth and the Sun. I don't know if we brought that up. That's where our name, our club name, is kind of a play on the on distance, astronomical unit. And then you get to light years, and you need to put 63,000 of those astronomical units in, can fit into one light year.
How many astronomical units are in a parsec?
It's parsec, I think, is like 3.3 light years, maybe.
3.26.
Yeah. 3.26. Okay. See, I knew.
I always round things.
I knew you guys would know the answer to that question.
Yeah, we like some of that, figuring out those numbers.
And that's 3.26 light years, so it's 3.26 times 63,000.
Ah. I'm going to let you guys do the math.
Okay. That's right. Bring out the calculator.
It's close, it's close to 200,000.
Wow.
Now, I also see that on the website, you've got graphs and charts about where the clear skies are. And so if you're, like you say, an armchair armchair astronomer, you can actually check those out and go and grab your telescope. And let's see, you've got Kachuma Lake, Santa Barbara, and Figueroa Lookout right now. And you've got the clear sky chart on that reading.
We click on that, and we can see it shows you your cloud cover, transparency, and then seeing seems to be the most important one that we look at to figure out how sharp the view will be. But there's a lot of variables, the size of your telescope and some other factors. Maybe, Jerry, what other factors are there in determining when you're going to have a clear sky?
Basically, cloud cover for me. Clear skies, really clear skies, are so rare here in the coastal zone. With the marine layer, that I'll take anything I can get on the other stuff.
And you look at humidity levels to know if there's going to be dew forming on your optics.
But we generally have heaters on our telescope to keep the dew off.
Ah, now, do you have very young members? I remember my brother becoming really interested in what you guys do when he was 10 or 11 years old. He, you know, we grew up in Chicago, and he would go to the observatory talks, you know, and beg our dad to take him just to the, you know, to the shows. Have you got young members?
We welcome all ages, but the trouble with really young members is it depends on how much their parents are supporting them as far as driving them to events and things. And we tend to get them when they're in high school and in college. But then if they're local, they tend to go away to college. And once they're out of college, they get a job, they get a family, they're too busy. And we see them again when they're empty nesters. So,
right. Okay.
I have a quick question. What is the process of determining images that are quote unquote, as you've used the term, that are fake? They're not real.
Well, the images are real. They're just in wavelengths you can't see with your eyes.
Okay. So what is it meant by fake?
I don't, fake is when you get somebody showing you a picture of, a full moon directly overhead in Antarctica or something like that. But, people will do that, but that's just out on social media.
Okay.
The images that come from professional telescopes are not in any sense fake.
Gotcha. Okay.
There was a video that went around recently, not recently, about 2 or 3 years ago, that showed, just like Chuck was saying, that showed a moon rising in the Arctic. And it was, as the moon rose, it changed its size. And so there's a lot of cues that you can tell, if you know astronomy, that you can spot something that isn't real.
Uh-huh. And a faker who really doesn't know how to use Photoshop.
Yes.
Let's go to a quick break, Richard, and let's see. I want to reintroduce the astronomical unit, and I'm finding out that unit is the distance between the Earth and the Sun. I didn't know that. And so the title of the club is Astronomical Unit, the astronomy club sponsored by Santa Barbara Natural History Museum. And I'm finding out the wealth of information and events that sbau.org. If you have anybody in your family that's interested in astronomy, this is the club, and it's 100 members nationally, and they have their meetings first Friday of every month at the museum, at the Natural History Museum. Don't turn that down. We'll be back in a minute talking more about this wonderful club. Back, it's Elizabeth Stewart, and I thank you so much to the Astronomical Unit, our own club, our own astronomy club in Santa Barbara. Thank you guys for being with us, and I want to introduce to the program my favorite drama department in the world. This is Santa Barbara High School Drama Department, and Jenna Tico organized a little bit of a promo because we're going to do a shout out to the club, to the school. Presenting Dracula, and I've got Draculites in front of me here on Zoom. I have Izzy Fabio, who plays Van Helsing, a senior. And Malia Hubbard, St. Joan, is also a senior at Santa Barbara High School. David Benavides is Jonathan Harker, a senior. Julieta Garcia Gonzalez is the stage manager. She's a junior. And this is a really interesting production because it's a way of presenting Dracula. I wonder if one of you can talk about the presentation. It's different from any other Dracula. How about, let's say Izzy. Izzy, tell us how it's different.
Well, we've incorporated a lot of really interesting music. We have a student who's composed all the music, and we've incorporated movement into it, and there are these really amazing movement scenes and dances in the show, and it just adds like another level of depth to it, and it's really awesome to be a part of.
And Molly, yes, who is St. Joan? I'm not completely familiar.
So there, another special thing about our version of Dracula, this is not in many of the traditional representations. We have a bit of an insane asylum, and St. Joan is just one of the people in that dank, creepy, insane asylum. Yes.
Okay, so this is you guys have added St. Joan in an insane asylum to this.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. And of course, Jonathan Harker, we know, and that's David's role. So, okay. So David, how are you presenting it? Because, you know, we usually see him as sort of the leading romantic kind of interest. Are you playing him that way?
Yes. So Jonathan, he's very much in love with Mina. And he is the leading romantic interest, but he's also kind of like an awkward person. He's kind of, you know, he's very much impressionable. He's very young, so he gets himself in trouble, especially with Dracula's wives. He ends up cheating on, oh my gosh, so scandalous, on Mina. But yeah, he's a lover for sure, but he's also very out there.
Okay, and so Julieta is the stage manager, and Julieta, this is a thankless job, stage manager. I've often interviewed your department before on shows that they've brought, and I've been to a number of them. They're always fantastic. But I always joke with whoever's doing the stage management, because I was had a career in ballet, and our stage manager was so overworked. I mean, the stage manager does everything. So I can remember our stage manager was at my ballet company was named Rue. And Rue had kind of hippie long hair and had his headphones always on, and he was always running everywhere. I mean, even changing toilet paper rolls. This guy was just doing it all. Stage managers just do it all. And nobody really notices them. What do you say to that, Julietta?
Well, I think for this show specifically, a lot of people have been helping me out. But I mean, like, yeah, I do take on a lot of jobs and like try to take on tiny things everywhere. But for this show, it felt like the directors were really working with me a lot of the times, and like the actors and like, I don't know, a lot of the like technical people, like all the techies backstage were just like always trying to work together. So it was like this show specifically for me has really been a lot easier, because I think everyone knows their job and knows how to help me, I think. But yeah, I do think it's a really hard job.
I wanted to know, this is something, because, you know, Richard's heard me say this before. I love covering you guys at the drama department at SBHS. And one of the reasons is because it brings me back to my own high school career. Do you know that, I still have my same friends. We used to call ourselves the M Hallers because it was the music hall. So during COVID, all 20 of us got together on Zoom, and we had gone to a number of reunions for our M Hall. But it's so interesting to me because each one of the 20 of us is involved somehow in a creative job. You know, that it's so not everybody stuck with performance. You know, in my case, you can only dance for so long, but you know, a number of us have continued in theater, but you know, we've got people in creative musicians and all sorts of people that have stuck with their creative endeavors as their career. Every one of the 20 of us. It's very interesting. It's been like a remarkable discovery. And I want to know one thing based on my own background. A show tends to be so chaotic. And then right before you do opening night, some magic happens. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
Yeah, four of you are shaking your head. It's like that person doesn't, they're going to screw up. This person's not going to remember their lines. This not. So let's say, Izzy, can you tell me what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's like the chaos sort of just all focuses in on that one night, opening night, and everything sort of clicks into place. And it's not as if everything goes correct or right, but the energy just sort of synchronizes and everyone's on the same page and characters come alive. And it's just like the whole show lights up, and it's so fun to be a part of. It's such a great feeling.
That you get a little bit of that high of everybody's energy coming together, but the chaos beforehand. I mean, I remember saying to myself, this will never work. It'll never fly. This show will never fly. And all of a sudden, boom. Now David's got a big smile on his face. David, you must know that feeling.
Yeah, so actually, this is the first show I'm doing here at Santa Barbara High School. So I actually got to experience all of this community in theater. And one of the things that stuck out to me is that right before opening night, we all got together and we all did this crazy dance, and we were all getting our nerves out. We were all screaming, and it just really goes to show how much we're all in this together and how much we support each other. And when you have that security, you know that you're free and you can do crazy things on stage, and your scene partners are there for you. So it's a great feeling.
You write that you learned a lot about yourself during this show, and that you want to pursue in college next year. You want to pursue theater arts, etc. Now, but you also mentioned this is the first time you're performing with Santa Barbara High School. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. This is the first show I've ever auditioned for. I did one show at my previous high school. But really, it's just really, truly amazing doing this.
Okay, so let's do one quick shout out. I wonder if Juliet can tell us exactly how we can buy tickets and when the performances are.
So it was yesterday, and we were going to have a show on October 30th at 7 p.m., and then a show on the 2nd, the 3rd, and the 4th. And those are going to be at 7 p.m. as well. And then there's a show at 2 p.m. On Saturday. And then you can get tickets at www.sbca.booktix.com. Booktix with a N.
Very good. Well, thank you, guys. I'll be at one of those performances, and thank you very much for coming along. Dracula at Santa Barbara High. Don't miss it. It's going to be fantastic. It's a new thing. We've never seen a Dracula like this before. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.